Hello, and welcome to another edition of Maplewood Barn Radio Theater, brought to you in conjunction with KBIA. We've been away for the summer, as our regular listeners know. Our shows for recent Friday nights have been replays of your past favorites. But tonight's the night. Our fourth year of Maplewood Barn Radio Theater officially begins. I'm Byron Scott, president of the Maplewood Barn Board of Directors, and I want to thank you all for coming out to Nifong Park all summer to see our live outdoor shows on the barn stage. What? You say you didn't get to a barn show this season? Well, shame on you. Thousands of Mid-Missourians and tourists came to see some really great performances. And we have some of the actors from some of those shows coming to you tonight on the radio. Would you just have to look forward to seeing you out at the barn next year? Meanwhile, welcome back to this half-hour show that's been part of Friday nights on KBIA since September 30th, 2011. Tonight we bring back one of our favorite authors, P.G. Wodehouse, with an adaptation based on his short story, At Geisenheimer's. This is not about Bertie and Jeeves, but it does take place, as many of those stories do, in New York. It is a tale of the dance clubs and speakeasies that dotted the metropolitan landscape in the early 1900s. Our heroine for the story shall remain nameless, for reasons that will become obvious. But we will call her Miss Roxborough, or Roxy, because that name is as good as any other under these circumstances. Probably even a little better. Now, we turn it over to her so that she can tell us the tale of what happened at Geisenheimer's one fine spring evening.
As I walked to Geisenheimer's that night, I was feeling blue and restless. Tired of New York, tired of dancing, tired of everything. Broadway was full of people hurrying to the theaters. Cars rattled by. All the electric lights in the world were blazing down on the Great White Way. And it all seemed stale and dreary to me. Geisenheimer's was full as usual. All the tables were occupied, and there were several couples already on the dance floor. The band was playing a song that made me feel nostalgic, although nostalgia is not what it used to be. One way or other, the tune made me homesick. I was looking round for an empty table when a man jumped up and came towards me with an expression like I was his long-lost sister. He was from the country. I could see that. It was written all over him, from his face to his shoes.
Why, Miss Roxborough?
Why not?
Don't you remember me?
No, I'm sorry, but I don't.
My name's Ferris.
It's a nice name, but it doesn't ring any bells.
I was introduced to you the last time I came here. We danced together.
This was probably true. If he was introduced to me, he probably danced with me. That's what I do at Geisenheimer's.
It was a year ago, last April.
You can't beat these rural charmers. They think New York is folded up and put away in camp for every time they leave, and only taken out again when they pay their next visit.
Now do you remember me?
Why, sure, I remember you. Algernon Clarence, isn't it?
Not Algernon Clarence. My name's Charlie.
My mistake. And what do you have in mind, Mr. Ferris? Do you want to dance with me again?
Yes, I do. Very much.
So we started dancing. Mine is not to reason why. Mine is to but do and die, as the poem says. If an elephant had come into Geisenheimer's and asked me to dance, I'd have had to do it. That's what I get paid for. Mr. Ferris was one of those earnest, persevering dancers, the kind that have taken 12 correspondence lessons. His country dress and style of speech made me even more homesick. It had been one of those kind of days where something was in the air that made me think of pigs and chickens. Perhaps it was just a problem with the plumbing. But right now I had to deal with Charlie from Squeedunk, who couldn't have been more worked up if he'd been a star in a Broadway show. We weren't on the same plane, Charlie and me. The way I'd been feeling all day, I wanted to talk about last season's crops, while he wanted to talk about this season's chorus girls.
This is the life. I suppose you come here quite a lot?
Pretty often.
Lucky girl.
I didn't tell him that I came there every night, and that I came because I got paid for it. If you're a professional dancer at Geisenheimer's, you aren't supposed to advertise it. Management does not want anyone to think that the great contest for the Loverly Silver Cup, which they offer later in the evening, is a joke. I win it on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and Mabel Frances wins it on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. So the owners don't like us to tell people we're employed there. They prefer the Loverly Silver Cup to be viewed as a legitimate competition.
It's a great place. I'd like to live in New York.
Why don't you?
Well, Dad's dead now, and I've got the drugstore, you know.
He spoke as if I ought to remember reading about it in the papers.
And I'm making good with it, with lots of new ideas. Say, I got married since I saw you last.
You did you? Well, then what are you doing dancing on Broadway like a bachelor? I suppose you had left your wife at Hicks Corner singing, "Where is my wandering boy tonight?"
Not Hicks Corners. Ashley, Maine. That's where I live. My wife comes from Rodney. Ah, pardon me. I'm afraid I stepped on your foot.
My fault. I lost a step. Well, aren't you ashamed to even think of your wife when you've left her all alone while you've come to whoop it up in New York? Haven't you got any conscience?
But I haven't left her. She's here.
In New York?
In this dance club. That's her up there.
I looked up at the balcony. There was a sorrowful face hanging over the red plush rail. I'd noticed her before and wondered what the trouble was. Now I began to see.
See her? Watching us over the railing?
Why aren't you dancing with her and showing her a good time?
Oh, she's having a good time.
She doesn't look like it. Wouldn't she rather be down here dancing?
Eh, she doesn't dance much.
Don't they have dances in Ashley, Maine?
It's different at home. She dances well enough for Ashley. But, well, this isn't Ashley.
I see, but you're not like that.
Oh, I've been to New York before.
I could have bitten him, the sawn-off little rube. It made me mad. He was ashamed to dance in public with his wife. Didn't think she was good enough. So he dumped her in a chair, gave her a lemonade, and told her to be good, and then gone off to have a good time.
This is the life. Let's dance again.
We'll find somebody else. I'm tired. I'll introduce you to some friends of mine.
If you say so.
Here, girls. Shake hands with my friend, Mr. Ferris. He wants to show you the latest steps. He does most of them on your feet.
Hi, girls. This is the life.
I left him and went up to the balcony. She was leaning with her elbows on the red plush railing, looking down on the dance floor. Hubby was moving around with one of the girls I'd introduced him to. She didn't have to prove to me that she came from the country. I knew it. She was a little bit of a thing, old-fashioned looking. I made for the vacant chair. I'll sit here if you don't mind. I just finished dancing with your husband.
I saw you.
She fixed me with a pair of big brown eyes. I suppressed the urge to take something solid and heavy and drop it over the rail onto her hubby. Management would not approve. The poor girl looked like a dog that'd been kicked.
He looked very happy dancing with you.
Hey, I didn't mean anything by it. I just came up to talk to you.
I don't feel like talking.
Aw, come on, sis. Tell me your troubles.
I don't know you.
You don't have to know a person to tell her your troubles. Sometimes I tell my troubles to the neighbor's cat, and I don't know it very well. Why did you want to leave the country with summer coming on?
We're on our honeymoon. Charlie wanted to come to New York. I didn't want to, but he was set on it. He'd been here before.
So he told me.
He loves New York.
But you don't?
I hate it.
Why?
I hate New York. I'm scared of it. It isn't fair, Charlie bringing me here. I didn't want to come. I knew what would happen. I felt it all along.
What do you think will happen then?
Before I married Charlie and moved to Ashley, in my hometown of Rodney, there was a man named Tyson, Jack Tyson. He married a Rodney girl, and they came to New York for their honeymoon, just like us. And when they got there, I guess she got to comparing him with the fellows she saw and comparing the city with Rodney. And when she got home, She just couldn't settle down.
Well?
After they had been back in Rodney for a little while, she ran away, back to the city, I guess.
I suppose he got a divorce?
No, he didn't. He still thinks she may come back to him.
He still thinks she'll come back after she's been away 3 years?
Yes. He keeps her things just the same as she left them when she went away. Everything just the same.
But isn't he angry about what she did? If I was a man and a girl treated me that way, I'd be apt to murder her if she tried to show up again.
Oh, he wouldn't. Nor would I if anything like that happened to me. I'd wait and wait and go on hoping, and I'd go down to the station to meet the train every afternoon, just like Jack Tyson. Oh.
Oh, for goodness sake, don't cry. I know it's a sad story, but it's not your funeral.
It is. It is. The same thing's gonna happen to me.
Get a hold on yourself. Don't cry.
I can't help it. Oh, I knew it would happen. It's happening right now. Look. Just look at him.
I glanced over the rail and saw what she meant. There was her Charlie dancing about all over the floor, grinning like he'd just won an election. I saw him say something to the girl he was dancing with, and I bet it was, "This is the life." If I had been his wife in the same position as this kid, I guess I'd have felt as bad as she did. For if ever a man exhibited all the symptoms of incurable New York-itis, it was Charlie Ferris.
I'm not like these New York girls. I just want to live at home and be happy. I knew this was going to happen if we came to the city. He doesn't think I'm good enough. He looks down on me.
Pull yourself together.
And I do love him so.
Goodness knows what I would have said if I could have thought of anything to say. But just then the music stopped, and somebody on the floor below began to speak.
Ladies and gentlemen, there will now take place a great number contest. This genuine sporting contest.
It was Izzy Behrman making his nightly speech, introducing the Loverly Cup. And it meant that for me, duty called. Izzy was looking around the room, and I knew he was looking for me. It's the management's nightmare that one of these evenings Mabel or I won't show up, and somebody else will walk away with the Loverly Cup.
Oh, yes. I love him very much.
Sorry, I've got to go. I have to be in this.
Yes, of course.
And then suddenly, I had a great idea. It came to me like a flash. I looked at her crying there, and I looked over the rail at Charlie, the boy wonder, and I knew what I had to do.
It was nice meeting you.
Hey, wait. You're coming with me. Stop crying and powder your nose. You're going to dance.
But Charlie doesn't want me to dance with him.
It may have escaped your attention, but Charlie is not the only man in New York, or even this club. I'm going to dance with Charlie myself, and I'll introduce you to someone who has a set of twinkle toes.
The lady of each couple will receive a ticket containing a number. The dance will then proceed, and the numbers will be eliminated one by one. Those called out by the judge, kindly return to your seats as your number is called. The number finally remaining is the winning number. The contest is a genuine sporting contest decided purely by the skill of the holders of the various numbers.
I could see Izzy getting nervous, wondering where I was.
The winner will receive this lovely silver cup presented by the management. Ladies, please step forward and receive your numbers.
There, Mrs. Ferris. Don't you want to win a lovely silver cup?
But I couldn't.
You never know until you test your luck.
But it isn't luck. Didn't you hear him say it's a contest decided purely by skill?
We'll try your skill then. For goodness sake, show a little grit. Suppose you win. Think what it will mean. He will look up to you for the rest of your life. When he starts talking about New York, all you will have to say is, "New York? Ah, yes, that was the town where I won the Loverly Silver Cup, was it not?" And he'll drop as if you had hit him behind the ear with a hammer. Pull yourself together and try.
I'll try.
Good for you. Now you get those tears dried and fix yourself up, and I'll go down and get the tickets.
Gee, I thought you had run away or was sick or something. Here's your ticket.
I want two, Izzy. One is for a friend of mine. And I say, Izzy, I'd take it as a personal favor if you would choose her as one of the last two couples. There's a reason. She's a kid from the country, and she wants to make a hit.
Sure, that'll be all right. Here are the tickets. Yours is 36, hers is 10. Don't get them mixed up.
Hey, Charlie, let's do the lovely silver cup dance together.
You bet!
I went back up to the balcony and found Mrs. Charlie looking as if she had never shed a tear. She certainly had pluck, that kid.
I think I'm ready.
Good. Now come on. Here's your ticket. Stick to it like wax.
Thank you. I'll do my best.
You've probably seen these dance contests at Geisenheimer's or someplace else. They're all the same. When we began, the floor was so crowded that there was hardly elbow room. After a few minutes, Izzy spoke.
Numbers 7, 11, and 21 will kindly rejoin their mournful friends.
A few minutes later,
numbers 13, 16, and 17, goodbye.
Off we went again, soon after.
Number 12, we hate to part with you, but back to your table.
A plump girl in a red hat left the floor.
Numbers 6, 15, and 20, thumbs down.
And pretty soon, the only couples left were Charlie and me, and Mrs. Charlie and the fellow I'd introduced her to. So there it was, a straight contest between me and Charlie, and Mrs. Charlie and her man. Charlie, as I've already hinted, never took his eyes off his feet while in action. Apparently, the correspondence college he'd attended didn't teach you how to look around the room while you're dancing. He was breathing heavily down my neck in a determined sort of way, with his eyes glued to the floor. You know how the public begins to sit up and take notice when these dance contests have been narrowed down to two couples? There's a sort of hum in the air as you go around the room. People at the tables start applauding. It didn't take long for me to realize that it wasn't Charlie and I that the public was cheering for. We would go around the floor without getting a hand, and every time Mrs. Charlie and her guy got close to the audience, there was a noise like the circus had come to town. She sure made a hit, and no wonder. I took a look at her across the floor, and she was a different kid from what she'd been upstairs. I never saw anybody look so happy. One glance, and she made you think of fresh milk and new-laid eggs and bird semen. Gee, I felt just like that myself. I could have smelled the new-mown hay if it wasn't for the fact that I was in Geisenheimer's. And in Geisenheimer's, you have to smell Geisenheimer's because it leaves no room for competition.
Oh, just look at that gorgeous footwork.
And keep working, Charlie. It looks like we're falling behind in the betting. Do some of those fancy steps of yours. We need them to win.
Oh, right.
And the way that boy worked, it was astonishing. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see Izzy Behrman, and he didn't look happy. He was gathering courage to announce the decision, knowing that the audience would not be happy. Mabel Francis told me that one night when Izzy declared her the winner, she thought there was going to be a riot. There wasn't any doubt which couple the customers were rooting for, but Izzy had his duty to do and drew a salary for doing it. So he moistened his lips and looked around to see that his strategic exits weren't blocked, and in a husky voice said,
Number 10, please retire.
Come on, Charlie. That's us. Time to sit down.
Well, we didn't do so bad, did we? We didn't do so bad, I guess. We...
And he looked up at the balcony, expecting to see dear little wife draped over the rail, worshiping him. But she wasn't there. Then he saw her, down on the floor. She wasn't doing much in the worshiping line just at that moment. She was too busy making a triumphal finale. She and her partner were doing a few rounds for exhibition purposes, like the winning couple always do at Geisenheimer's. and the room was cheering them on. You'd have thought from the way they were clapping that they had bet all their spare cash on her. Charlie's jaw dropped open, and he began to mutter.
But...
I know. It looks like she could dance well enough for the city after all. It looks like she put one over on somebody, doesn't it? It looks like a pity you didn't think of dancing with her yourself.
I...
Come along and have a nice cold drink. It'll make you feel better.
But she... But I... But we...
He tottered after me to a table, looking as if he'd been hit by a streetcar. He had got his. I was so busy looking after Charlie that it was some time before I glanced around to see what Izzy Behrman thought of the whole thing. If you can imagine a fond father whose only son has hit him with a brick, jumped on his stomach, and then gone off with all of his money, you'd have a pretty good notion of how poor old Izzy looked. He was staring at me across the room and talking to himself. Whether he thought he was talking to me, or whether he was rehearsing the scene where he broke it to the boss that a stranger had won his lovely silver cup, I don't know. Whichever it was, he was being mighty eloquent. I gave him a nod, as if to say it would all come right in the end, and then I turned to Charlie again. He was beginning to pick up.
She won the cup.
Yes, she did.
But, well, what do you know about that?
I'll tell you what I know about it. If you take my advice, you'll hustle that kid straight back to Ashley before she gets New York into her system. When I was talking to her upstairs, she was telling me about a fellow in her village whose wife left him and ran off to the city. Looks like the same thing might happen to you.
She was telling you about Jack Tyson?
Yeah, that was his name, Jack Tyson. His wife started loving New York more than she loved him. Now, don't you think it's odd that she mentioned him and how he lost his wife? If she wasn't thinking of doing the same thing herself?
You don't think she would do that?
Well, if you'd heard her, she couldn't talk about anything except this Tyson and what his wife did to him. She talked about it in a sad sort of way, kind of regretful, as if she was sorry but felt that it had to be. I could see that she'd been thinking about it a whole lot.
She has?
He stiffened in his seat and began to melt with fright. It wasn't hard to see that he'd had a jolt and was going to be a whole lot less jaunty and metropolitan from now on. In fact, the way he looked, I would say that he was finished with the metropolitan jauntness for the rest of his life.
I'll take her home tomorrow. But will she come?
Well, that's up to you. If you can persuade her, here she is now. I need to run along.
No, please stay. It's only right that you hear what I have to say.
This gave me pause and made me wonder what she had to say. If it had been Charlie, of course, he would have said, "This is the life." But I looked for something snappier from her. If I had been in her place, there were at least 10 things I could have thought of to say, each nastier than the other. She sat down and drew a deep breath. Then she looked at Charlie.
Oh, Charlie, dear, I wish I'd been dancing with you.
Darling, you're a wonder. What will they say about this at home? Mary, how would it be if we went home right away? First train tomorrow, and show the folks back home what award-winning dances look like.
Oh, Charlie, yes!
You will? You don't want to stay here? You aren't wild about New York?
If there was a train, I'd start tonight. But I thought you loved the city, Charlie.
I never want to see it again in my life.
Please excuse me. It looks like everything's turning out nicely here. I think there's a friend over there who wants to speak with me.
Well, certainly. Oh, and thank you.
So I crossed over to where Izzy had been standing for the last 5 minutes, making signals to me with his eyebrows. Izzy was not coherent at first. There was an African explorer who used to come to Geisenheimer's a lot, and he used to tell me about tribes who didn't use real words at all, but talked to one another in clicks and gurgles. Izzy Behrman started talking the same language now.
No.
Be calm, Izzy. Something is troubling you. Tell me about it.
Say, are you crazy? What did you do that for? Didn't I tell you as plain as I could? Didn't I say it 20 times when you came for the tickets that yours was 36?
Didn't you say my friend's was 36?
Are you deaf? I said hers was 10.
Oh, then say no more. The mistake was mine. It looks like I must have gotten them mixed.
Say no more? That's good. That's great. You've got nerve, I say that.
It was a lucky mistake, Izzy. It saved your life. The people would have lynched you if you'd given me the cup. They were all rooting for her.
What's the boss gonna say? What did I tell him?
Never mind what the boss will say. Don't you have a romantic bone in your body? Look at those two sitting there with their heads together. Isn't it worth a silver cup to have made them so happy? They're on their honeymoon, Izzy, for heaven's sake. Tell the boss exactly how it happened, and say that I thought it was up to Geisenheimer's to give them a wedding present.
God, now you've done it. Now you've given yourself away. You did it on purpose. God, you mixed those tickets on purpose. I thought as much. Say, who do you think you are doing this sort of thing? Don't you know that professional dancers are 3 for 10 cents? I could go right now and whistle and get a dozen girls for your job. The boss will sack you just 1 minute after I tell him.
No, he won't, Izzy, because I resign.
Resign? Why would you want to do that?
Because I'm sick of this place, Izzy. I'm sick of dancing. I'm sick of New York. I'm sick of everything. I'm going back to the country. I thought I'd gotten the pigs and chickens out of my system, but I haven't. I've suspected it for a long, long time, and tonight I know it. Tell the boss with my love that I'm sorry, but it has to be done. And if he wants to talk back, he must do it by letter to Mrs. John Tyson, Rodney, Maine, is the address.
And with that, Roxy walked out of Geisenheimer's and out of New York and back into the arms of her husband, who had faithfully come to check the train that day. Mr. and Mrs. Charlie Ferris returned to Ashley, Maine, and won every dance competition in the area for years and years. And, of course, they all lived happily ever after. We hope you have enjoyed this adaptation of the P.G. Woodhouse short story entitled At Geisenheimer's by the Maplewood Barn Radio Players. Our performers in this production were Joy Jackson as Miss Roxborough or Roxy, Matt Baker as Charlie, with Mrs. Charlie being played by Shonda Salazar, and Matt Davis was Izzy. This show was engineered by Darren Howage and adapted for radio by Brad Buchanan, with post-production by Amy Humphrey and Joe Hayes. Thanks for listening, and we hope you will join us again next week for another classic story. Brought to you by the Maplewood Barn Radio Players, right here on KBIA.